Sifting Through the Ashes on Wall Street. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. What a rough day it was yesterday for markets. The Dow closed down 465 points, nearly 2%. The S&P 500 closed down 2.25%. And the NASDAQ, the poor NASDAQ, closed down 2.75%. Jim Paulson is chief investment strategist at Luthold Group. He says the market's vulnerable and volatile for a variety of reasons: rising Fed rates, inflation fears, and very highly overvalued, perhaps overvalued stocks.
What happens with a vulnerable market is the news flow daily has much more impact day in and day out than maybe the same news would have a year ago when the market wasn't in such a vulnerable position.
Among the casualties were some prominent tech stocks. Intel, Tesla, and Amazon each have had separate setbacks. Apple might not use Intel's chips anymore. Regulators criticized Tesla. The president threatened Amazon. Adding to it all, China has slapped tariffs on 128 U.S. goods as the trade conflict between the two countries escalates. Didn't make for a good day in markets. Let's take a look at how the numbers are so far today. The FTSE in London is down 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are looking up, up in the 4-6% range, with the Dow future up 93 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.76%. Banks borrow from one another all the time, even internationally. They charge each other interest, and that interest rate affects what they charge you and me. So in the world of finance, that interest rate is an important number. It's known as LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate. The problem is that it can be manipulated. So the New York Fed is, starting today, publishing a new interest rate measured differently. It's called the Secured Overnight Financing Rate. It's designed to replace LIBOR. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has more.
LIBOR, just so you know,
it is the world's most widely used benchmark for short-term interest rates, right? It underpins $350 trillion of financial contracts.
Jillian Mariuti is at Mission Capital. She's referring to contracts like the ones behind complicated derivatives, even credit card agreements. LIBOR influences lots of adjustable rate debt.
That also includes floating rate mortgages and student loans. So that's how it affects the everyday person.
The differences between LIBOR and SOFR are complicated. But the big idea is that while LIBOR is based on what banks say they will do, SOFR is based on actual transactions. Richard Sandor is at the American Financial Exchange. He says the shift to SOFR will take a while.
Over the next 2 to 3 years, we will see a gradual adoption of new interest rate benchmarks.
So there will be time to work out any problems. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is on a mission that drives what we do every day: to increase economic intelligence across the country. We feel it's important work that we're already doing, and with your help, we will do more of it. We're counting on you to partner with us so that we can grow and keep getting better, especially now when it's increasingly difficult to cut through the media clutter and bring objective, trustworthy reporting front and center. For as little as $5 a month, consider signing up as a Marketplace investor and support independent public service journalism. The payoff comes in knowing that you're helping keeping people informed about economic forces that affect our lives. If you could, donate today at marketplace.org. Thank you.
Mental illness has become, in many ways, a ticket to jail. That's the thrust of a new book by Elisa Roth, author and former Marketplace New York bureau chief. Insane, America's Criminal Treatment of Mental Illness, is out today and details the connection between mental illness and America's criminal justice system. Elisa sat down with my colleague David Brancaccio earlier this week.
Let's start with a number, a percentage. People in the U.S. in prison who have mental illness.
About 50% of the people in jails and prisons in the United States have a mental illness.
All right, about half. It's my hope that people read this account, but give us a sense of this. His name is Brian Sanderson, one of your sources for this. A firefighter for decades, interesting guy, did some stand-up comedy, nice family, nice car, nice job, and then mental illness. But how does the criminal justice system get involved in this?
He has bipolar disorder, and the first time he became psychotic, he heard voices. He was driving down the coast. He was somewhere in South Carolina. The voices in his head told him that he needed to stop, get a hotel, get some rest. He ends up in the elevator of the hotel, completely naked, riding the elevator up and down. The hotel calls the cops. The cops come. They arrest him. He spent 6 months in jail in Spartanburg, South Carolina, getting effectively no treatment, scared out of his mind, thinking that the officers were who were supposed to be taking care of him were, in fact, CIA officers, that they were going to kill him. He attacked one. He ended up in solitary confinement. He was finally let go. A judge told him to go home, got some treatment, was doing better. A couple years later, he goes off the medication, started hearing the voice again, became absolutely convinced that his downstairs neighbor was building bombs.
All right. So it becomes breaking and entering. It turns out it's not explosives, but it's a stick of butter. He doesn't know this, given what he's suffering from. But the arresting officer is someone who knows him from his firefighting days?
It is. He, you know, law enforcement, first responders, they all know each other. The guy says, hey, Brian, let's take you to the hospital and get you checked out.
Which, from your point of view, is like the right answer here.
This is absolutely the right answer. So far, so good. He goes to the psychiatric hospital. He's sitting in the intake room. There's a young psychiatric technician who's asking him all the questions. And suddenly the delusions kick in again. And he describes this beautifully of this woman's face turning into the face of a demon. He said it's the most terrifying thing he's ever seen. Stands up, slugs her, and runs out of the room.
Then it becomes jail.
And then he goes to jail, and he is completely, again, completely psychotic, completely delusional. He says he almost doesn't remember these 5 or 6 days. And at some point, the voice told him that he needed to blind himself.
Oh, yeah. But a first-person account of this odd situation in America where the criminal justice system, often in prison, is where mental health conditions are addressed.
Exactly, or where they need to be addressed because that's where the people are ending up who need that care.
The book is called Insane, America's Criminal Treatment of Mental Illness. Alisa Roth, thank you.
My pleasure.
And you can head over to marketplace.org later today to hear an extended conversation with Alisa about the public policy history that's led us to where we are today and potential reforms to address the issue. Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.